I'm Jonathan Capehart, and welcome to Capehart. On March 21st, Washington Post Live hosted the Futurist Summit, The New Age of Tech. The last of the day-long conversations was between me and Adam Bree, CEO of Skydio, which is the leading drone manufacturer in the United States. Have a listen as we talk about the prominence of China in the drone space and why that's an issue for U.S. national security, the role Skydio is playing in documenting Russian war crimes in Ukraine, and in policing here at home.
We have examples in our customer base, increasingly on a daily basis, where you put a drone in the air, you can find the person, you can see if they're armed or not, you can guide the officers in, and I think that's fundamentally better for everybody involved. You know, it keeps the officer safer, it keeps the community safer, it even keeps the suspect safer, because the officers don't have to guess about what they're walking into.
But I kicked off the conversation with Adam Bree by asking where the name Skydio came from.
So I sort of giggled in saying the company name because I asked you, how do you pronounce it? So how do you pronounce the company name?
Skydio.
Skydio. I speak Italian, so when I saw it, I said, oh, Skydio. And in Italian, Dio means God. So I was like, oh, how clever, Sky God. Was that on purpose?
That was unintentional. So Skydio comes from Sky Studio. We were thinking Sky Studio, and you Google Sky Studio, and you get a million hits. And when we were a three-person startup, there was no way we were going to be at the top of that. But Skydio was more unique, and we found out 3 months later that it also meant Sky God.
Uh-huh. And so are you in the Italian market?
Not yet.
Take it from me. If you go to the Italian market, Skydio.
Yeah, we already, we know what our launch campaign is going to be there.
So you co-founded Skydio 10 years ago, first producing consumer drones and then designing drones for military and corporate use. Talk briefly about this evolution and how quickly was that evolution?
So the big bet that we made when we started the company was that drones can be useful for a really wide range of tasks, but a fundamental limiter at the time, and largely still today, is needing to have an expert pilot there flying the drone. So when we started, we went all in on computer vision and AI, and this was in 2014, before most people thought these things were cool. You know, we thought they were cool, we thought that it was gonna be a really big deal. So the big bet that we made is make the thing smart enough to fly itself, build in the skills of an expert pilot, which just makes it more useful to more people in more ways. And we felt like the consumer market was probably gonna develop first. That turned out to be true. So our first products were consumer oriented, but we always felt like the consumer product foundation was kind of the right starting point for other kinds of applications. You know, the fundamental thing that our products do is put sensors in important places to capture useful information. You can think of it like a flying camera. So the consumer platform did in fact turn out to be a really useful starting point for all the things that we do now across a really wide range of industries, you know, construction, public safety, energy utilities, all the way up to national security and defense and having soldiers use these things on the battlefield.
So since we have this here, this is a Skydio drone.
Yeah.
And this is the closest I've ever come to actually being near a drone. Is it heavy?
Pick it up. It's about 4.5 pounds.
Huh. And how many different types of drones do you have?
So we have a few different models, but this is our flagship drone. This is the Skydio X10. We launched this at the end of last year. And this brings together a lot of really amazing stuff. You know, I sometimes say that drones are like the Mount Everest of technology, but they have every piece of wireless, cameras, optics, vibration, thermals, aerodynamics, and then for our drones, a bunch of artificial intelligence and machine learning built in as well.
So DJI, a Chinese company, it controls more than 70% of the global market, drone market. But in 2021, the U.S. government put the company on an investment blacklist. How has that impacted Skydio's growth?
So I would say that there's two big themes in the market that we think are really important. The first is the transition to AI and autonomy. And with a lot of organizations, drones have reached a point where they've proven that they can be really valuable. You know, energy utility might have stood up a drone program. They've got somebody who's an expert drone pilot who started bringing their drone to work. They're proving that they can capture useful data. But then the question is, how do you scale that? And training everybody to be an expert pilot or hiring expert pilots is very difficult. And so AI and autonomy makes these things more useful to more people. The other big trend, I think, is cyber and national security. And most of the drones in the market today are made by Chinese companies. And I think it's just become clear over time that that's sort of fundamentally untenable for a lot of critical industry applications to have drones that at the end of the day are going to be beholden to Chinese national security policy, which is mostly in opposition to our national security. And so, you know, there's a very strong need in the market for secure alternatives. And, you know, we that benefits us. But I would say more than that, it, you know, we feel a responsibility to deliver because it's important for our customers. And I think it's important for our country.
Mm-hmm. So right now, your drones are being used in real world situations. In fact, there are hundreds of your drones in Ukraine right now. And we have some photos that were taken from a Skydio drone in Ukraine. I don't know which monitor, right behind us. Can you explain what we're looking at?
Yeah, so this is work that we've done with USAID in collaboration with Ukraine's Office of Prosecutor General. And it turns out over the last few months, Skydio drones have really become a critical tool for documenting Russian war crimes. So we have a product called 3D Scan, where you basically just tell the drone, here's the thing that I want to create a digital copy of, and it will go off and do it. And at this point, they've scanned over 100 civilian structures that have been attacked by the Russians, and they're using it to basically gather evidence and make a case. And within the last couple of weeks, they've gotten a couple of indictments in the International Criminal Court based on evidence collected with our drone. So this is just one application, but I think that I was actually in Ukraine 2 weeks ago. It's really a window into the future when it comes to drone use. I think it's very clearly the future of conflict and war, but I think that it's also the future for other industries because the stakes are so high there, they have to use drones. And on the front lines, they don't do anything without putting a drone in the air. They're using them to find targets. They're using them to keep their own troops safe. They're using them at just massive, massive scale, consuming 10,000 plus drones a month.
So as we were showing the pictures there, everyone noticed that we stopped on this one particular picture, and this one looks very different from all the other ones. Can you explain what we're looking at here?
Yeah, I mean, so this was a civilian structure that was attacked by the Russians, and basically they're using, this is a 3D model that was created. So the drone went out and captured hundreds of photos of the structure. And then there's a software process called photogrammetry where those photos are stitched together to create a metric 3D model that you can use to take measurements, you can use to capture different angles. And so in their case, they're using it to figure out what kind of munitions were used, which angle those munitions came in from as part of building a case. And it's actually worth noting that this kind of thing is a major use case for public safety agencies in the US. They use these things for crime and accident scene documentation. This is just a very, very high stakes and really tragic example.
So as you just mentioned a moment ago, you were in Ukraine. What's your takeaway after having seen the front lines and how your drones are being used in person?
So as I said, I think it's really a window into the future. And I think it unfortunately highlights this tension and the necessity of having secure alternatives to Chinese drones. So the Ukrainians are still heavily dependent on Chinese drones. They're using, and Chinese drone technology, they're still using them at massive, massive scale, but it's a super fragile dependency because these drones and the companies that make them are ultimately hostile to their interests. So, you know, China has put in place export controls to try to make it harder for the Ukrainians to get these drones. The companies themselves have put in place firmware things that make them less useful to the Ukrainians, so they constantly have to hack the firmware to get them to do what they need. I see this as just a significant challenge to us and the rest of the US industry to step up our game and deliver products that are useful for them. The impact isn't zero today, but it's not as much as it should be, and this is becoming a major, major focus for myself and Skydio. You know, we've delivered thousands of our drones to the US and Western allies, but where it matters most on the battlefield in Ukraine, I think that's the proving ground, and that's really what we need to be focused on, both for their sake, but I think ultimately for ours as well.
You know, so this drone here and the drones that are being used in Ukraine are, as you mentioned before, being used to in addition to all the other things you talked about, document war crimes. But there are other drones that are being used as weapons of war. And yeah. America has a storied history with the use of armed drones to kill enemies in foreign countries. How do you reconcile the products you're developing with the moral and ethical concerns of drone warfare?
Yeah, it's a great question, and something that we think a lot about. So the Ukrainians are using all different kinds of drones. I mean, they have like wing drones, quadcopter drones, multi-rotor drones, surveillance drones, decoy drones. And then they also have a category of, they call them FPV kamikaze drones. So FPV means first person view. It means you fly the drone by wearing goggles that show you what the drone sees. And this is one of the primary methods that they're using to deliver strikes now, where you fly an FPV drone, you put ammunition on it, and you use it to go and find a target. So that is not something that we make. We are very focused on surveillance drones. So this is, in the military, they call it ISR, intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance. So our drones are really designed to make it really easy to see what's happening, get better information, and make better decisions. You know, I fundamentally believe in the mission of the US military and our allies. They have very difficult jobs to do. And I think that giving them tools that give them better information to make better decisions is really important, good work. I think there are tricky questions as you start getting more and more automated systems that can deliver strikes, lethal strikes. And this is something that the world is gonna have to grapple with. It's not something that we're focused on, because we're focused on the information gathering drones, but that is still part of the kill chain. I mean, that's part of the equation of having these automated systems. And it's something that we're getting increasingly thoughtful about as a company, but we're not alone in it. I mean, the US military thinks about this stuff a lot. And they're increasingly refining their policies around weapon systems and weapon systems with AI. And I think it's going to be a project for the world really to grapple with.
So Adam, let's talk about police departments. You work with police departments across the United States. Explain how drones are being used in those departments.
So they're used for all kinds of things. I mentioned crime and accident scene documentation. If you have a crash on a highway, it could take 3 or 4 hours using conventional methods for somebody on the ground to walk around and perform all the measurements that they need to gather the evidence that they care about. With a drone, you can do that in 20 minutes. You can clear the crash scene faster. It's just, it's a phenomenal thing for everybody. They're used for search and rescue missions. I think we're seeing a search and rescue mission sort of training exercise here with Oklahoma City PD using one of our drones.
Hold on. Are those voices coming from the video, or is something happening outside? Okay, it's coming from the video.
Yeah. We could probably turn off the audio on the video.
Go ahead. Sorry, Adam.
But they're also used in the highest stakes scenario. You know, you might have a situation where you have an armed suspect loose in a neighborhood, and conventionally you'd have officers on an 8-hour manhunt going door to door, guns drawn, looking for something that somebody that could be dangerous. And we have examples in our customer base increasingly on a daily basis where you put a drone in the air, you can find the person, you can see if they're armed or not, you can guide the officers in. And I think that's fundamentally better for everybody involved. You know, it keeps the officer safer, it keeps the community safer, it even keeps the suspect safer, because the officers don't have to guess about what they're walking into. So the notion of drones in policing, and especially AI-enabled drones in policing, I think can get folks rightfully concerned, because there's certainly potential for misuse, abuse, privacy invasion. You know, what I would say, having worked with a lot of agencies over the last few years, is that our most sophisticated, best customers take transparency incredibly seriously. You know, a lot of them release the footage from their drone flights quickly after them. And in a lot of ways, drones are, it's like a flying body camera. Like, it creates this sort of objective picture of whatever happened. But, body camera typically can only document what happened. Drones can actually affect the outcome, because you can put a drone into a dangerous situation that you wouldn't want to put a person, to get that information proactively rather than reactively and make better decisions. Let's talk about it.
Well, we only have 4 minutes and 30 seconds, can't even go down the rabbit hole I wanted to go down. But what do you say to critics who believe drones enable police departments to behave like Big Brother?
So I don't want to live in a world where we have drones randomly flying overhead surveilling in our houses. I don't want to live in that world. I don't want to build that world. And we have been very proactive on this front. We've engaged with public safety community organizations to release a set of principles that we think lead to the best outcomes for their communities. Things like transparency, protecting privacy, and there's a lot of things you can do from a technology perspective to help with this. I mean, the drone knows where it is, it knows what it's filming, it can not point its camera at things that it shouldn't be pointing its camera at, it can focus on whatever task the officer cares about. So I think there's some technology things that can be done. I think there's practices and best practices within public safety agencies that can be set up and followed. And ultimately, these agencies are accountable to the communities that they serve. You know, there's always some democratic chain up through that. And I think that's a really important mechanism. And the best agencies, I think, really lean into the transparency element of it, which I think is really the best answer. And what we've seen is that the more that a community understands what their officers are doing with drones, in general, the more supportive of it they become because they can see the impact on community safety.
When you say democratic chain, you mean small d democratic change, meaning people have a say.
Yeah, I mean, like who they like the sheriff. Like, right. We sell to a lot of sheriffs, county sheriffs, who are elected directly.
So you likened it earlier to sort of a body cam. And we've seen instances where we thought body cams were going to be the thing that solved everything until we had police-involved shootings where, oh my God, the body cam wasn't working or the body cam wasn't turned on.
Yeah.
So who, in the end, who controls the footage that the drone picks up? And is there any possible way that we could see the drone wasn't recording in a high profile situation?
So this is a newer product, but I think it's gonna become the dominant operating paradigm. We have a capability with X10 called Remote Flight Deck, where the drone has a LTE modem in it. It can be flown remotely. So you can have an officer in a remote flight center who is through a web browser controlling the drone. And one of the things that does is it gives some time and distance between the person who's like in the heat of the moment on the ground. You've got somebody who's removed from that who can be more objective and be a guide to the people who are actually on the ground. So increasingly, I think you'll see the center of control shift from the officers who are like actually on the scene in the moment to folks who are helping them and on their team. They're police officers themselves usually, but who are operating remotely. And I think that separation can be quite valuable in terms of the outcomes. And it's all digital stuff. I mean, the drone is recording the video. We have a partnership with a company called Axon that has a digital evidence management system where the video gets uploaded, tracks chain of custody. So there's good controls in place. And I think that the availability of this objective aerial video is fundamentally a good thing for transparency and accountability of police officers.
Don't be fooled by the clock because it says we have 45 seconds, but I've got two questions. So we're going to go over time. And you've touched on AI technology, and I want you to expand a little bit in reaction to something that retired Admiral James Stavridis recently wrote in the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah.
And I'm quoting here, the winning side will be the one that's developed the AI-based decision-making that can outpace their adversary. This is using AI technology in drones. My question is, what happens when the country that's developing those AI drones en masse is Iran or China? Do you believe the U.S. is currently outpacing other countries in that space?
So I basically wholeheartedly agree with the sentiment there. I look at things through a drone lens. We're a drone company. If you look at the last decade of drones, there's no question it has been dominated by Chinese companies. But I think the shift to AI and autonomy presents an opportunity for the US to really stage a comeback. I do believe that by and large, the US is leading the way in AI today. Like the most cutting edge stuff is happening here. And this is fundamentally why we founded the company, because we believed that AI and autonomy were the future of the industry. And we have a technology lead there over our Chinese counterparts. And I think that that stuff is going to become more and more important. So, you know, we can't stop other countries from developing it. But what we can do is move as fast as we possibly can ourselves. And I think that really matters. The stakes are very high.
So we've talked about the power and possibilities of drones in warfare and public safety, but is there anything that gives you pause?
Pause in terms of how it...
Yeah, so
we watch the Terminator movies.
Like, yeah, that's what I mean. Will the drones destroy humanity?
Yeah, there might be some like software classes inside Skydio called Skynet. Look, I think that I'm a technology optimist. I think that if you look at what our products are doing today, it's the most exciting thing to me. We're building this incredibly cutting edge sci-fi level technology, but we're really deploying it to the core industries that our civilization runs on. You know, we're giving it to energy utilities and construction workers and departments of transportation, and they're using it to do things that would be where the alternative is like a person hanging off a rope to go inspect something, or not knowing the state of an insulator in a substation that could lead to an explosion. And so there's certainly things that you could be concerned about. And we try to think through this stuff. We try to be proactive as a company. We try to engage with external experts to help us think about our product roadmap and whatnot. But I think that the impact today is overwhelmingly positive. And I still think we're just scratching the surface of what's possible. So I'm generally very excited and optimistic about the impact that technology is having now and where it's going.
Okay, so I lied. I have one more question because forgot to ask it before the last question. And you've mentioned this a couple times. And for those of you who know drones and the technology, I apologize for this simple-minded question. But a couple times you talked about expert pilots.
Yeah.
How do you become an expert pilot? I mean, if I flew airplanes, would I be a good candidate to become a drone pilot?
So this is a great question to end on. So I'm an expert pilot. So
an expert drone pilot.
To
be clear.
Yeah. Which is actually harder than being like a real airplane pilot. We could talk about that because you're not in, like when you're flying an airplane, you're in it. You see exactly what it sees. You feel what it feels. Whereas when you're on the ground trying to fly a drone, you have to sort of project yourself into it. So I grew up flying radio controlled airplanes. I took it way too seriously as a kid. I actually won a couple of national championships. There's competitions for drone flying. Most people don't know about that.
I did not.
It is as nerdy as you would expect.
Absolutely.
It takes like years of practice, like anything else. Like you can spend as much time as you want on it. And the more time you spend, the better you get. And actually, so I grew up flying this stuff, and then I was starting grad school at MIT around the time when you could first take radio control airplanes and put computers and sensors on them and write software to get them to do smart stuff. So my sort of origin into this was basically trying to take the things that I could do as an expert pilot and codify them into algorithms to get the drone to do it on its own. And that's sort of the genesis of the technology stack that's in our Skydio drones now.
After hearing that last answer, I really do think you should change the pronunciation to Skydio. Adam Bree, thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Capehart. It's edited by Nick Roberts. We'll have new episodes for you every Thursday. I'm Jonathan Capehart. You can find me on Twitter at CapehartJ.